G and I were in trouble. Married for 3 years, we had hit an impasse. She wanted kids, and I didn't. And there didn't seem to be any way around the issue. Neither of us were willing to budge. She loved kids and had spent all her professional life teaching them and nurturing them and watching them grow and feeding from their shiny eyes and big hearts, and wanted to raise some of her own. I had been a happy child and made friends fairly easily most of the time and liked kids, although I never really spent much time around them as an adult, but was dead set against having any of my own. Some of it was that I was afraid, and rightly so, that my life would end. Or rather, even worse, that it wouldn't end, but that I'd have to live it in the service of somebody else, and would have to put my needs and desires on the back burner, if not push them off the stove entirely. Although a legitimate fear, my own experience was that my mom had been able to follow some of her dreams and live her life, and she had raised me almost entirely by herself. There were compromises made, and I was required to reach a premature level of maturity, to help make our tiny family function, but she clearly loved me, and I loved her, and we had, and still have, one of the best parent-child relationships I have ever witnessed. Mostly, I was selfish and worried about bringing kids into this cracked and troubled world. I hated the idea of watching a perfect, beautiful, trusting human being get beaten and crushed by the evils and inequities of this world and have to learn to protect their heart and avert their eyes and make the millions of rationalizations and compromises that being a member of this, or really any, society meant. Plus, I had some serious unresolved issues with my own father, and didn't want anybody to have that kind of a relationship with me. So we were stuck. Then G resorted to what turned out to be an alarmingly common deceit. She lied about using her birth control. I later found out that many women do this in order to kick the relationship up to the next level. And, even worse, most of the time, they seem to have no qualms about it. I couldn't believe it when I heard that from G, who had polled several of her friends who were mothers. Their rationalization was that the husband or boyfriend had cold feet and would be a great dad but didn't want to take the plunge. So they'd engineer an accident, get pregnant, and that would be that. G, fortunately, had the character and courage to feel guilty almost immediately after trying it with me and told me about it. And although I admired her honesty, her confession and the subsequent fight put an enormous strain on our relationship.
So many rivers and so much to learn.
So much so that we both went into therapy.
But the moon is so full, the stars are so bright, and my hand is steady, my touch is alive. Look in my eyes, hold on real love, won't you, darling, across Texas tonight? I want you, darling, across Texas.
Through my weekly visits to the healing hills of Topanga, I started to unravel some of my feelings about my father and some of the stresses that relationship put on me. I decided I needed to confront him about some of my feelings and bring them out into the air. I dreaded doing this, but I was encouraged by my therapist, and it sounded like the only way of really moving on, so I took a deep breath, and then another one, and I wrote my dad a long letter. I told him about the things that I loved about him, but then I also told him about the things I didn't love about him, like his tendency to disappear and stay emotionally unavailable, and his seeming need to control our relationship and set the rules, and, especially, his cruel assertion, when things got rough between us, that he wasn't really my father at all. I cried, and then folded the pages into an envelope and sent them into the frozen wilds of Alaska. He, being a therapist himself, was quite gracious. He wrote back right away. Phone conversations were rare and strained between us. We're both much better at writing than talking. And told me he was sorry, and that he was glad I told him these things, and that he didn't want me to carry these bad feelings around, and hoped we could mend old fences and come together in a new, peaceful space. Grateful for his generosity, I wrote him another long letter back, thanking him for his response and promising that I would try to put the past behind us and encouraging him and me to have strength in the darkness. The dawn would be coming soon. Smiling, I folded the pages into an envelope and sent them north.
But when he calls me, I will be able.
That weekend, I had my last visit with my therapist, and we both agreed that I had made good progress and that I should carry on by myself for a while. I thanked him, he thanked me, and I drove back home with a light heart. The next day, I got a call from the sheriff of Kodiak, telling me that they had found my father's body that morning. Numb, I asked him how he had died, but I already knew the answer, and had known the answer for many years. Sure enough, I was right. Self-inflicted gunshot to the head. When I got up to Alaska and was cleaning out his mailbox, I found my letter, unopened, sitting among the bills. Since I find music so powerful and so eloquent, I often turn to it to help me express emotions I can't find words for. Many times, a piece of music will slither its way through my defenses and underneath my skin and wrap itself around some fundamental truth that I can't reach any other way. When my father killed himself, the song that floated to the surface and made itself his anthem for me was the Beatles' Blackbird.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arrive.
An uncommonly beautiful song that captures so much of my father that it's difficult to believe it wasn't written about him.
Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly into the line of a dark black night.
For G, my wife, the song that holds the mystery of his death is Emmylou Harris's beautiful rendition of Lucinda Williams' Sweet Old World.
See what you lost when you left this world. Sweet old world, the breath from your own lips, the touch of fingertips, a sweet and tender kiss, the sound of a midnight train.
Written as a gently bittersweet scolding to someone who's left the world early of his own accord, this beautiful song lists some of the countless reasons to celebrate life and hang on through the dark nights that everybody encounters.
See what you lost when you left this world. This sweet old world. See what you lost when you left this world. This sweet old world.
Emmylou's voice is perfect for this song. so full of knowledge and sorrow and hope. And the combination of her fragile tones, the beautiful harmonies, the heartbreaking lyrics, and the shadowy flutter of my father's broken wings behind the crystalline production never failed to stop me in my tracks and fill me with a curious blend of sorrow, hope, and a sublimely calming peace. Emmylou Harris has been a fixture on the edges of country music for 30-some years, and although she's never been hugely popular, she's one of the most respected vocalists in the genre. Her career has had its waxes and wanes, and recently has blossomed thanks to the album Wrecking Ball, produced by the Midas-like Daniel Lanois, who reinvigorated the careers of U2 and the Neville Brothers, among others. Lanois has a wonderfully light touch and deftly sets the purity and rawness of acoustic instruments in a subtle and lush electronic bed, influenced, no doubt, by his years of collaboration with Brian Eno. Rolling Stone dismisses Harris as being good at harmony singing, but weak on her own. Her harmony singing is sublime, and one of her first milestones was singing duets with Graham Parsons. Their voices blend brilliantly, and their unconventional harmonies worked wonders on such classic country tunes as Love Hurts.
Of happiness,
The best thing about country singing, real country singing, is the unpolished humanity of it, the frayed edges and shaky cracks that reveal a life full of love and loss, a voice that speaks of lessons hard learned and never to be forgotten. Emmylou Harris has such a beautiful, frail, intimately human voice that it's hard not to get caught up in it. She sings as though she's confessing to you, her best friend, and it's too late at night to keep the truth out anymore. G and I pulled together during the brutal months that followed my father's death, and she helped me grow the scar that covers the hole left in my soul by my father's gun. Overcoming my fear of my father helped me realize that I wouldn't be that kind of a dad, that I couldn't be that kind of a dad. Eventually, I knew that I wanted a child of my own to help me heal my heart. Three years after my father took himself out of my life, Owen came into it, and daily teaches me the joys and heartaches of being both a father and a son. I always wished he could have met my dad, but ironically, it was probably the fact that he couldn't that made his life possible in the first place.
I remember holding on.
My son would never know my father, and my father would never know his beautiful grandson, raised the way my father never was, given the parental love and understanding he tried in vain to find for himself. See what you lost when you left this world?
But